Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, August 30th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for this hump day edition of the show. We're going to be chatting with Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com, this week's Hunting for Winners segment. Lots of stuff to get to with him. We're going to talk about some of the more technical aspects of the betting market, break down some games, get a free pick from him, and then see how he plans to be adjusting his power ratings as we get out of week one. A few things before we bring Cheetah on the air here that I want to mention. The first is that we've got those contests going on over at bangthebook.com right now. Daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, cash prizes for top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. Those contests are free to join. Cash prizes available, like I said. All you have to do, sign up with an account over there at bangthebook.com. Give us your email address. We send off a couple of newsletters a week. It's nothing big. We don't spam you with anything. So it's a really good opportunity for you to get your feet wet and also have a no-risk proposition there trying to get some of those cash prizes. Lots of good content going up over at bangthebook.com as well. We're putting together our article schedule for the weeks here during college football and the NFL season. We've got some new writers. We've got some old writers. We've got all kinds of stuff coming your way. Opening line report, market moves, power ratings for both the NFL and college football, news and notes, pick up on the latest injuries and suspensions, and daily fantasy coming up for the NFL. Tons of stuff that's going to be going on over at bangthebook.com. And like I said, we're planning out a schedule so you'll know every day of the week when that stuff is supposed to come out. We're going to adhere to that schedule, and you're going to have tons of next level outstanding analysis over there at bangthebook.com. We are your one-stop shop for all of your sports betting news and information. I've been telling you about the great promo code offer available over at DSI Sportsbook. I'm going to tell you about it right now. Again, if you sign up over at DSI, use that promo code BTB and the number 25. You'll get a $25 free bet just for signing up, just for creating an account. When you decide to fund that account, you'll get a 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. If you decide to play some casino games as well, you'll get a 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino also. So a 200% deposit bonus with a $25 bet over at DSI Sportsbook. You cannot beat that. I'm sure I'll talk about with Cheetah both today and throughout the segments here on Bang the Book Radio during the college football season. Shopping around, critically important. You want as many outs as possible. Every half point matters. Every 5 cents of juice matters. Every cent of juice matters. Sometimes the best line will be at DSI. Sometimes it won't be, but you want to give yourself that opportunity, and setting yourself up with that BTB25 promo code, a very good way to go about it here as we look to pretty much officially kick off the college football season with week one starting here on Thursday night. Without further ado, we'll bring on today's first and only guest. That is the great Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com. Preston, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Appreciate your time as always, sir. Lots of stuff to get to here on today's show. We've got six FBS versus FBS matchups on Thursday, six more coming up on Friday, and then a whole slew of games on Saturday. But week one is a very unique animal because these games have been out since pretty much Memorial Day weekend with lines on all of them. I think that's when most of them went up at five dimes, and also had some numbers out there in Vegas at the South Point and CG and pretty much all over the map. So this is a different type of animal here this week with some numbers that have been stale for quite some time.
Yeah, it definitely is. Week one's always different. I mean, there's been some groups that have started firing late last week and then yesterday, into these games just because they've been settled in and available everywhere for so long. But typically when you're just going week to week, you have your openers and you kind of have a day or two where nothing's moving, or at least much, and then everything will start getting bet into Wednesday, Thursday, and then again, the day the game stuff starts moving. But yeah, these have been sitting for months in the case of South Point, like you mentioned, or even offshores. I know it's been probably upwards of 6 weeks now where you could bet these offshore. So I think we're all itching to actually find out how these games go and watch some football. But I'm curious to see, a lot of the moves so far. Some of them have been really drastic. If there's any buyback in any cases, coming up closer to the game, or if they keep moving more or stay put. There's a lot of market interpretation to be had in week one and week two, early in the season especially.
I want to talk first about sides. We'll talk about totals after that, and I know you've hit some totals here for week one, and some of those numbers have already moved significantly. But in terms of sides, you know, like I said, these have been up for a while. Like you said, they've been up for a while. Starting to see some movement out there in the marketplace. In a typical week, when do you think we, you know, should target the line moves out there for side action? When do you think that a lot of the influential groups come in on these games?
Yeah, it's interesting. I know you had a listener question that was more specific in the sense that they wanted to know, you know, how you can identify whether an early week line move is sharp or if it's set up for a buyback. There's always going to be sharper guys hitting openers, even though they are smaller limits. There's guys out there doing this for a living, grinding. They're going to take 1,000, 2,000, you know, even the bet online limits, 500. They're going to take shots on those lines just because they're so bad. So I think moves in those games aren't necessarily incorrect. And they're also probably not buybacks because a big group isn't, you know, hitting a number for a couple bucks to maybe set up a play down the road, I don't think. I actually think the buyback theory in general or proposition or that it happens often is maybe kind of a myth. I'm sure it happens sometimes. I know I was talking about even on this show where they're playing both sides of games, you know, around plus money to try to maybe set up some arbs and scalps in that regard. But for me, like this market, the sports betting market is very similar to any market out there. The stock market, I'm trading a lot of cryptocurrency stuff right now. It's very similar. Like if you have some random alternate coin, I'm not even Bitcoin, but like some other one, there's all these small coins you can invest in now. And you'll see, again, this is the same for stocks. You'll see, you know, the price in this case for a coin, they go by Satoshis, which is a unit under Bitcoin. But say for example, you bought at 8,000 and it's moving up, but at 10,000, it always kind of drops back down and it's hitting that resistance or that wall is what it's called in economics. It's very, very similar to moves during the week in a sports market where, like, you're betting a play or other people are betting a play, but once it hits a certain number, there's going to be people out there that like playing back the other way, and it's going to move back the other way, and it's never really going to be this thing. I mean, like, perfect example is this Cal North Carolina total that opened up at like 66 and came all the way down to 52.5 yesterday, and finally there was some buyback on the over. I mean, if people still like the under, it would have kept moving down, but there are people out there that finally we're like, okay, this is too low, and bet it back up now to 55.5. So that's an example of, like, there's always going to be a resistance point. I don't think it was the people betting it down, playing back as a setup or a buyback, like this guy was kind of getting at, trying to read when the buybacks are happening. I actually don't think there's that many. I think it's just, there's so many people out there in the market. There's a lot of sharp groups and sharp people betting into these that generally when you have one move, it's legitimate for a group of people. And if it, say, moves from 6 to 8, and then there's another group of people out there who like +8, and they'll bet it back down and it'll, you know, close 7 most likely, or more often than not. So I don't necessarily think they're buybacks. And, you know, the movements happen all week long, like I mentioned. Now, getting back to, I guess, your part of the question, Sundays there's opening moves. Mondays usually the totals will come out at Chris Bookmaker, and then everyone copies them, but those will move right away. I think a really influential group is Right Angle Sports, and they release stuff earlier in the week, like Wednesday and Thursday. And there's a lot of the big heavy hitters, once limits get increased a ton on Saturdays, that are moving the market then. So it's kind of a constant gauge you have to have your eyes on all week.
So what do you like to do then? What is your approach? Are you sort of looking to get out in front of those moves because you know the timeline of when those influential groups are coming out? You know, what's your plan of attack?
Yeah, I mean, mine's pretty straightforward. I get some information from groups and stuff and trade information on, you know, with some of those. But for me, it's Sundays I'm hitting anything that just seems really far off to the point where I need to hit it now or it's going to move anyway. Then there's some other games where once I really start digging into stuff more throughout the week that I'll wind up adding, you know, during the week, just kind of on my own time. I don't have like a particular set day where I'll, you know, release a bunch of stuff and, you know, everyone gets it at a certain minute. Although I may have to end up doing that down the road if we keep moving, you know, the market at the extent or to the extent we have so far. But I do think that the market's moving quicker to week one games than they will later in the year. So we might have to adjust some. But for me, it has been kind of a, all right, Sunday, here's some openers that are really bad that I know I'm going to be betting no matter what. then I dig into every game throughout the week, and I'll probably have a couple I add on like a Tuesday, maybe Wednesday, and then Friday I usually have a set of ads after I've kind of just gathered all my information all week before the game Saturday. So I would say the majority of my plays come on Sunday and Friday probably, but I'll have a couple that I add in between there too, and it's not necessarily because I'm trying to beat a group to move, although I think that's technically what you're doing all the time. You're trying to beat a number before it moves to where you wouldn't bet it, right? Because you can be someone that influences the market yourself, which we are somewhat a little bit. We'll move a total a point and a half or two if I release it just right now on any total. But for an example would be, and I actually gave this play out for free just 2 days ago. I was doing a Podcast U clip for the Boston College and Northern Illinois game, and I decided just to have that be like my free play for the week. We bet over 46. I broke it down in the clip for everyone to listen, why we liked over 46. I said it's worth playing to 48, and that's where it settled in. We moved it 2 points, settled at 48. Then the next morning, it got blasted to 52, and now it's 52 today. So that was yesterday that it got hit even more. So, I mean, we beat someone else to the move, which is great. And that's kind of what you're trying to do, is you're trying to beat moves, but it's not necessarily like you target, I guess, to answer your question directly. You're not targeting certain days to beat certain groups or anything. It's just in general, I think if you have a sense that it's going to be moving, then you need to bet it earlier in the week. If you don't think it's going to be one that's going to be so far off, and it's more of maybe a situational spot, or you're waiting on information based on practices during the week or maybe personnel decisions, then you're going to wait and bet those Friday before the game Saturday, and you're not worried so much about missing out on maybe 3 points because the number is just bad.
Well, and this is a big thing to talk about heading into next week. And the reason I really wanted to touch on it here with you on this Wednesday show is because stuff is going to move very, very quickly on Sunday, because you're going to get lots of overreaction. You're going to see, some of these games have had some significant moves both this week and also throughout the summer. So you have to think that odds makers are going to be looking to adjust. And at the same time, the betting public and the sharper groups out there are going to be looking to adjust as well. So, when you look at Sunday, and we'll kind of put the cart in front of the horse here a little bit before these week one games, if you like something on Sunday, you're probably better off just going ahead and grabbing it, because you're either going to be able to buy back and drink the juice, or if it looks off to you, it's going to look off to other people, and you can maybe get out in front of a move that way.
Yeah, definitely. Generally, especially if you're not worried about limits, which most people aren't, you can easily get down whatever you're betting per game on your games on Sunday. But that comes down to, I know your question that you sent me in the rundown right before we started was like for people that don't have power ratings versus people that do, or maybe actually doing numbers, that's a drastic difference. Like people that are doing numbers and are confident in them, they can fire away on Sundays and I think and be fine. If you don't have power ratings, I don't think you have any clue then what you're doing on Sunday versus Friday or Saturday. So I don't know if there's actually a difference for those people. So I guess you want to differentiate that, where if you're confident in your numbers and you're handicapping in that regard, Sundays are fine. If you see a big discrepancy, fire, I think. If you don't do power ratings, you're just kind of looking at games and teams and based on what you saw the day before, that's why those people probably aren't profitable long term. It's more of a coin flip, and I think in just as many cases as maybe they beat a move on a Sunday, they could have a game move against them, a couple points too. If they would have waited, they would have had better, because they just don't have a sense of the market and the actual numbers for these teams.
Well, and of course, one key thing here, if you do make power ratings, make your numbers for week two before the week one games are even completed, so that you can see what number you had, try to eliminate some of that recency bias that's out there. And then, of course, once these numbers do pop on Sunday, you can take a look and reevaluate. But would you have any other tips for people that don't do power ratings? Because I'm sure, like you said, a lot of our listeners out there, they're not worried about hitting max limit bets. A lot of them probably don't have power ratings. They just like to be invested on the weekends, have a genuine interest in this industry, but maybe just don't have the time to do it. Would you have any suggestions or tips for them?
It's really tough. I read the question. And for people that don't know, Adam just gives me kind of a rundown a couple hours before the show, just so I'm aware of what we're talking about. And I actually put some thought into this because I didn't know the answer. And I still don't. So I'll be honest about that. I think, and I'm not someone that shills my picks or selling picks at any of that. and Adam can attest to that. But I don't know what advice I would give someone that just isn't following numbers or doing some sort of power rating system or projections of their own as far as how to know when to bet. I mean, I don't think there really is. And that's why people that don't have time and don't have the ability to do that do pay people for picks. They hopefully pay someone that they respect and trust will be ahead of the number or put them in a spot that's, you know, plus EV or profitable. And so that's why people do buy picks. And so, you know, advice to people that are just trying to guess on when to enter the market, if you have no clue and which games to even pick at that point. I don't know what I would tell them outside of, you know, try to find someone, whether it's paid or free. I mean, I should make sure that's the point I want to drive. There's a lot of good free information on Twitter too, or forums, but find someone you trust that you realize and notice is beating the market, is, you know, winning more than not, and it has the information and actually spends the time themselves. Because if that's the case, that's someone you can trust, and then maybe make your decisions based on them rather than trying to do it yourself. Because I think I was trying to put myself in their shoes, and I was like, I would be lost. I wouldn't know whether to bet Sunday, whether to wait and bet Saturday, you know, middle of the week, what am I even doing? It'd be really tough. So I think if you're not trying to handicap yourself doing some sort of numbers or projections, you know, find someone that you can follow or talk to that can help you out that way.
And the one thing I would say for our listeners out there that don't do power ratings, that don't have a set of numbers, if you get the chance to take the time to do it, make sure that you do, because in future seasons, it's going to be a lot easier for you. If you put in the good work, if you put in a good foundation to get some initial numbers, adjusting on a year-to-year basis isn't as difficult. It's not as time-intensive, not to mention you've got the entire off-season to do it. So, you know, as long as you've got that good foundation, those good hallmarks right away, and Cheetah, I'm sure you can back me up on this too. You know, once you've got numbers that you trust, then it's just about doing up downs of who's gone, who's back, coaching changes, all that type of stuff. You don't have to go through and set everything up.
Yeah, definitely. It's a process, but with every year it gets simpler and you also just get better at it. I was bragging actually on I don't remember which clip it was I did it podcast to you, but I just went out and said it. This is the first year when I got Steels magazine. I generally wait until I release my power ratings in my college football preview until I can check them with Phil Steele, where he's at, make sure I'm not off on that many teams. There was only three out of, you know, 130 that I even changed my power rating versus Steele. So that was the best I'd ever done. So, I mean, now, you know, 9 years or 10 years in, I'm at the point where I, you know, I trust my numbers, or my numbers are basically where Phil has them, and he does this, you know, year round for a living. And so I was like, you know, this is pretty cool. That was the most I had ever, I guess, got quote unquote correct versus where Steele was entering the season. Now you still have to know how to adjust them week to week and do all of that. But definitely with time and practice and just it's work. I mean, it's hard to do, especially if you have another 9 to 5 or another job. You know, with time and hours, just like anything else, you're going to get better at it for sure.
One more thing I want to ask you about here, and then we'll get into some specific games that are coming up on Saturday. You mentioned that, you know, the idea of a lot of setups for buyback with sharp groups kind of trying to play both sides of a line, you know, do some arbitrage opportunities, stuff like that. It happens, but to the extent with which it happens, you think it's kind of a myth. I just want to address one other thing that a lot of people talk about in this industry, and I want to get your take on it, and I'll do this with our other handicappers as we go throughout the next week and a half of shows or so. But this concept of a trap line, people always talk about how a line is a trap. I mean, is that something that actually does exist?
Was Floyd Mayweather minus 400, 500 a trap line? I mean, that's the definition of a trap line, and he won with ease, and everyone made a bunch of money. I kept telling people, I even tweeted about it, told some people in private. I said, there's people are like, well, this is too good to be true, right? There's something. And I was like, when 95% of the tickets are coming in on McGregor at books, at least 90 just about everywhere, when there's this many people betting McGregor, where I have friends calling me, texting me, saying, hey, can you go bet, because they know I live in Las Vegas, can you go bet McGregor for me, like over and over. And this is happening with everyone. I mean, and I'm like a religious conservative person who doesn't even come from a gambling background, and I had friends that don't gamble asking me to bet McGregor for them. And then imagine nationwide, worldwide. I was like, this is not too good to be true. This is not a trap line. This is just an opportunity for people that can recognize how much value really is in this line to make money off of it, and you know, a lot of us did. And so I think on a smaller scale for football, as you were getting at, there aren't really trap lines. No, I think if you understand why a line is where it is, more often than not, then you're in a good spot to realize that the, yeah, this number is correct, or maybe it's incorrect. And if that's the case, you're going to trust that and probably bet it. And, you know, if you're talking to enough people too, you can kind of, like I had a question. Here's a good example. I whiffed on this. So Nevada plays Northwestern. 52.5 was the open on the total. And I was like, man, a Northwestern total now all the way up to 60.5. And I was really looking, trying to dig like how this against Nevada, a team that's, you know, a season win total of 3.5, they're not very good. It's Northwestern and a Big Ten, team. They just never have totals in the 60s. And I asked Matt Lindemann, our friend, just like, I was like, what am I missing? Cause I thought there might be something, and I was considering maybe playing back on it. Or I also just wanted to kind of figure out like what's going on. And I was actually recording my breakdown for that game for the podcast you cite. And I asked him, and then as I was asking him, I was doing more research, I realized, and I didn't notice this until this year, Northwestern ran the 18th most plays in the nation last year. And I didn't realize that. I mean, they've been typically a slower team. It was like 5.5 more plays per game than just the year prior. They ran 79 plays or something. So I was like, well, I guess they ran a little more up-tempo for one, so that's part of it. And then obviously there's the side of Nevada, which is what Matt messaged me. He's like, yeah, he bet the over early on. And he said, it's brand new coaching staff and this and that, and the offensive coordinator's the son of the air raid godfather founder, and they're going to be passing a lot, running a lot of plays, and running up tempo. And so ultimately, I just missed out on that total. I missed out, but it's not like, generally if this game was, I guess what I'm saying is last year and a total of 60.5, you'd have the thought, oh, a trap line, like how's a Northwestern total against a bad team who might not even score more than 10 points, 60. You have to figure out why that's the line. You have to do some research, talk to people or whatever, but there's usually a reason the line is what it is. And I don't really think a trap line is a thing that exists. So that's the long-winded answer there. And, if people have questions about lines throughout the season, like, hey, why is this? Like, I remember a really popular one. It was last year, or the year before was like, it was 2 years ago because Michigan State wasn't very good last year, but they were only laying like 7 at Nebraska. And I think Nebraska should have won outright. They ended up giving up a Hail Mary like in one of the final couple plays. But the number like actually closed lower. I think it closed 6 or something. And I was telling people, like, no, that's correct. Like, that's a good number. And people just couldn't grasp that, Michigan State, the team that ended up going to the playoff, was only laying a touchdown to a team like Nebraska, who was just about average that year. So anyway, there's usually a reason. There's usually something to be found. And, even someone that I'm doing this, especially right now, half the day every day, and I missed on that Nevada Northwestern information, so it was good that I asked a friend or asked someone. And then when I was doing a little bit of my own gathering, I realized the Northwestern thing too, where they were playing more up tempo last year, and I hadn't noticed that before. And so anyway, it just takes some time and effort, but I would say trap lines, there's usually a reason that a number is what it is, and you just have to figure out why.
And I think another one, too, on a smaller scale is Utah State and Wisconsin, which that one's gone up from 49 to 52. And I was looking at that total move, and I couldn't figure that one out. Well, then I look and see that Utah State hired a new offensive coordinator who's a Mike Leach disciple, who was the pass game coordinator for Oregon last year. And then you kind of look at that number, you go, oh, that's why. Because Utah State probably will run more plays. Not particularly well, I presume, but they're still going to run more plays, and you have to account for that.
Yeah, and I mean, similar with the San Jose State South Florida game, which all the over money lost, but that moved from 63.5 to 71 at one point before it met some of that resistance or that wall, and some people bought back and played under. I think it closed 69.5, but the San Jose State crew is very air raid Mike Leach descendant, and it's definitely part of that, because I'm with you. I guess this is the point I want to drive and make, and same with Nevada here coming up, or with San Jose State in that game. But even if, like you said, if they're not effective, they're running so many more plays that it means Wisconsin's running more plays. And at worst, it's 3 and out, and Wisconsin has the ball in a really good field position spot and has the ball for a lot longer. And Wisconsin's expected to be efficient and scoring the football. And then if Utah State, if it's working and it is efficient and they're scoring, then obviously that's great for the over too. So whether or not, they're efficient running so many plays and running quicker, it still benefits an over because the other team then is going to be having the ball. And the other team's the one that's favored by almost four touchdowns and probably going to move the ball fine. So, yeah, definitely things when you see the scheme changing and the offensive coordinators and this and that, now you're seeing a lot of them that come from that Mike Leach or Texas Tech air raid stuff. They're everywhere now. And so and people have realized, you know, running quicker and passing more often, and it's the same in the NFL now too. It's a more efficient style of football and offense, and so more teams are adapting it, and totals you'll see moving up more often than not too.
All right, so we go from talking about the air raid to a team that's going to run the football a lot. That's the Iowa Hawkeyes. We're going to start breaking down some of these games here that we're looking at for Saturday, a wide variety of games, just to hit on some different topics, to hit on some different things here, to try and give you a good lay of the land here for week one. But Iowa's an 11.5-point favorite in this game. You've got Wyoming. Josh Allen expected to be a first-round pick. You know, there's all that hype surrounding the quarterback position there for Wyoming. But, you know, I think back to the bowl game between Tulsa and Central Michigan that you talked about, that we focused on quite a bit during bowl season, and how hard it is to simulate what Tulsa was going to do from a tempo standpoint. I look at this game. I look at the steam on Wyoming. It's going towards the number that I have for this game. But I'd be worried about the Cowboys trying to stack up defensively against that power running style of Iowa. How do you see this game?
You know, I'm not really sure how this is going to play out. And I talked about this one when I was doing my clip for the week. And I, you know, my number technically when I was doing it was 13. And that was after I had made an adjustment. If you recall, I told you there were three teams that I had to make an adjustment with Phil Steele. Two of them I had, I guess, rated way higher than Phil Steele, and one of them was Wyoming. So I made about a two-point adjustment on Wyoming, and so that made the number in my projections 13 for week one, which is where it opened, but now it's 11.5, which is where I would have had it if I didn't make the adjustment. So I'm sitting here thinking, well, okay, well, maybe I was right in thinking that Wyoming should be better, and Phil Steele's just down on them for some reason that, at least for now, no one out there, you know, knows why or expects to know why I'm – you know, the market so far has pushed this thing down to 11.5. So for me, I think it's now my original expectation was that this would be the line. So I'm definitely not going to be betting, you know, Iowa minus 11 because or 11.5 because my number says 13, like in my college football preview or something. Wyoming is a team I am sitting back and waiting and seeing how they respond to, you know, Iowa, obviously in week one, but then they play Oregon at home in week three before they start conference play. And I think we're going to learn a lot from them in these first few games. So for me, I'm taking kind of the wait-and-see approach with Wyoming and into, I guess, go with what you're saying as far as defensively and, you know, how they're going to maybe defend Iowa's run game, this and that. I will say Craig Bohl, when he was at North Dakota State a couple years ago, I believe when he was still there, they upset Iowa, and I think it might have even been in Iowa. It's not a team he hasn't played before or seen, and not like he didn't play them well either. And so I expect Wyoming to kind of have at least a leg up in that regard where, you know, the head coach has some experience. I think that's part of the – not only was Wyoming really bad when he entered FBS, but, I mean, he also just – all these teams and coaches and schemes that you play against are brand new. And now that Wyoming's in their third, fourth season under Bohl, he's just getting a lot better as a coach seeing all these teams for the second, third time, you know, especially in conference where they ended up going to that Mountain West Conference championship game last year, kind of out of the blue. And this is another one where, okay, well, typically, you know, he hasn't seen Hawaii. Oh, actually, wait, not Hawaii, Iowa. He actually has, you know, so this is one where I expect the game to be closer. And I think people that grabbed Wyoming plus 13 earlier, I think that's the winner. That's probably the side I would take if I had to pick a play.
It's such a strange week one matchup. You know, you have just – Craig Bohl has kind of incorporated some of those Midwest power running types of values with this Wyoming team, kind of a pro-style offense, and that's why the scouts love Allen, because he's a guy that has the measurables, and he's playing basically what amounts to an NFL style of offense there with the Cowboys. But they did lose some skill position talent here, so should be an interesting game. What do you think about Iowa long-term for this season in terms of, you know, Kirk Ferentz seems to get a lot out of these players. You said your number is 13, and then it would have been 11. Mine's actually at 9, so presumably I'm too low on Iowa, I guess.
Yeah, that could be. Maybe my Wyoming number is still fine, and it's Iowa that were off on a little bit. It's interesting. Iowa is a team, I think it was just two seasons ago, where they were, playing in the Big Ten title game, almost beat Michigan State and probably would have gone to the playoff had they won that game. Instead, they played Stanford in a bowl game, and I think they got blitzed and lost pretty badly. But then last year, they were 8-5, which is kind of the typical Kirk Ferentz team and Iowa program. Usually when they're more under the radar, like they are now, is when they'll win their 9 or 10 games and have a positive season. And it's when they're coming off the, a Rose Bowl appearance in 2016, where they didn't have as great of a season last year and kind of fell short, I think, where some people were hoping. What's nice for them about, I guess in general, just about that Big Ten division in the West, is it's Wisconsin and then everyone else. And I'm still not even 100% sold on Wisconsin anyways myself. So they definitely could, be right there. They have to play Wisconsin and Northwestern, though, on the road this year, so I don't think it really lines up for them to play arguably the two best teams, Wisconsin and Northwestern, in that division on the road. So I would say they're probably a similar 7-8 win team. My actual number projection I can pull up here, I think was just under 7 wins. Yeah, 6.83 wins. So for me, especially with Wyoming at a conference and Penn State, you have to get from the other division, and Ohio State from the other division, Michigan State on the road. It's just a pretty brutal schedule. So I don't think this is the year where they just bounce back. The schedule's way too tough. It'll probably be, 2018, where they're getting some of the teams in their division that are better than them or at least on par with them, and now at home, and then maybe they miss Ohio State and Penn State that year. So I think things are setting up for them to be good in two or maybe three, four seasons, not in 2017.
We'll move to 3 o'clock here, and we got a very interesting game in Charlotte, neutral site game between South Carolina and North Carolina State. And this is one that, to me, as I've been watching the odds screen, watching the market throughout the week, seems like we've got some influential groups that are kind of on both sides of this thing. When it's come down to North Carolina State -4, we've seen money coming on the Wolfpack. It went up to South Carolina +6. We saw buyback come in on the Gamecocks there. Seems like this one's kind of going to get batted around between those two key numbers.
Yeah, there you go. That's a perfect example of, I don't think it's no one out there that's trying to like set things up. There wasn't anyone betting the fours early on so they could bet +6. And especially now that you saw, once it went back to 4 again, it's back up to 5 now. So this is like that example I gave of between 6 and 8. It probably settles on 7. This might just settle on 5. And, that's just an example of where different people in influential groups or markets in a big market, I meant to say groups or bettors in a big market, can influence a line and have differentiating opinions or different opinions, period, and, bet against each other. And it's not necessarily, it was sharp guys hitting -4 to bet back at +8. Actually, so I won't say who, tweeting about UMass Hawaii, saying, this UMass money is just a setup so all the sharps can pound Hawaii +3. And sure enough, it closed +3. If that was the case, it never would have closed 3. So it was all UMass sharp money, and Hawaii ended up winning late anyways. It wasn't a setup to buy back on Hawaii +3. If that was the case, if they all went and hammered +3 on Hawaii, that would have been closing, 1.5-1 pick even. And it stayed at 3 the whole time at just about every book. So that was an example of someone who's trying to predict a buyback that people may follow or know who he is. And if you saw that, then you know who I'm talking about. But it was incorrect, and it wasn't a buyback. That was just a UMass move that didn't get there for the people that did bet it. But yeah, I think in general, it's a good example that you brought up with South Carolina and NC State, where there's guys that think NC State's gonna be really, really good this year. I'm in agreement with them. I also think South Carolina's going to be really good. I think these are two buy teams, actually, or buy on teams. And so for people that are kind of fighting it off, that's fine. I let them do that. I bet over 48.5 instead, and I think it's going to be – I think South Carolina's an over team and a bet on team, I think, most of this year, or at least early.
No, I mean, I can agree with that. What they did with Jake Bentley at quarterback obviously points to the idea of them having a better offense and, defensively, I mean, they were such a young team last year, and this is one of those cases where you kind of wonder when people talk about getting those coveted bowl practices for South Carolina to get to a bowl game last year and then take South Florida to overtime. I mean, that was a really impressive end of the season for them. Getting those extra practices, kind of the cherry on top for Will Muschamp. And, my line on this game is 5, so I'm right on it, so I'm not too worried about playing a side or anything. I am a Gamecocks fan now by marriage. with my wife from South Carolina originally. So, you know, I mean, I'll be rooting for South Carolina. I'll be following this game. I've actually thought about taking the drive to Charlotte for the hell of it just to go. But
nice.
You know, how do you see this one playing out as kind of a high scoring game though?
Yeah, I mean, my number is 5.5, so I was with you. I mean, I had no reason to lay 4, really, no reason to take +6. I probably would have considered things if it really got to 7 ever, which is looking like that'll never happen now. So yeah, I'm with you on the side, and I think it's interesting. One thing I looked at that was kind of keeping me from maybe potentially playing the total before the game didn't end up mattering because I think it was still low enough it was worth playing. But I did some research on scoring per quarters and opponent scoring per quarter, by quarter, I should say. In the back of my head, I just had this thought of NC State games always starting really slow. And I never had made note of it before. Just in my head, I was just like, I feel like they always are like 3-0, 6-3 games going into the second or whatever. And so I started looking into it. And sure enough, NC State was 10th in the country last year in opponent points per first quarter. And they only give up 3.5 points every first quarter on average. And it got worse with every quarter in an NC State game. So, I mean, going into it, my thought, the reason why I even was looking was I was like, man, maybe I'd be better off betting this live, like late first quarter or even second quarter or even second half. So I'm looking at it and I'm like, all right, well, let's look at, offensively. And sure enough, they were the best offensively in the third and fourth quarter. I think the third was actually slightly better than the fourth, but much, much better than the first and second quarters. And so sure enough, I was right. I was like, man, NC State, they can't score early and they actually don't give up points early. And then when they start scoring, they give up points. So that was something I did look at. So my guess is if you're asking how I see this playing out, if it's similar to how last year went for them and South Carolina had more just kind of equal splits everywhere, more or less. But this might start slow, which for people that are listening, the current number is 52.5 or 53. I bet over 48.5. I gave it out as a play. I think up to 51 was the range. So this is one, if you want to keep an eye on it and I'm right and it does start slow and then things pick up as, you know, it is a week one game still too. You know, teams could have rust on top of the fact that NC State just seems to play slower games early on. But that's a live game. I'd wait, you know, 6-7 minutes in. If it's scoreless, then you're going to be able to buy a number that I think offers you some good value in this game. So that's one thing I think I would point out or tell people to look at as this game is developing. I believe, is it a Sunday game or is it just Saturday? Yeah, it's just Saturday the 2nd. Cool. Yeah, Saturday the 2nd, 12 o'clock. You can look for that.
We're going to talk about another game here that's going to be played in an NFL stadium. Does that matter to you at all? I mean, all these college stadiums are relatively big now anyway, especially for the teams that are getting to play in NFL stadiums. Does the neutral site thing mean anything to you in week one, week two, anything like that?
No, because it goes both ways. If it is significant one way or the other, it goes both ways. So then you're asking, well, then what about like the totals, which it could affect? I haven't seen anything historically. I know the other thing you got to point out is it's happening more often now than it has in the past with a lot of these stadiums opening up and offering their services for college football games early before the NFL starts. I just haven't seen anything yet, and you know, time will probably tell. So for me, I don't think it makes a difference either way. The games in Australia, I think, have both gone over now back-to-back years. That's something to maybe worth watching is, their, you know, coaches and whatnot aren't afraid to just score for the Australian fans who don't see scoring or football ever again the whole year. So I don't know, that's like one angle that it maybe works. But as far as the games within the United States, you know, we'll see. But for now, I don't think it actually matters much either direction.
All right, Michigan and Florida. Here's a big-time game. 3.5-point favorites are the Wolverines. You've got extra juice at some books on the 3.5 on Florida, some of them 3.5 flat. Pinnacles -3.5, -103 on Michigan, -109 on Florida. So give you some kind of idea on what's going on out there in terms of where the sharp investment is, where the public investment is, all that type of stuff. This is a game that will get a very, very big betting handle. So I'm sure we'll see some pretty significant movement here on Saturday with this one. What are you seeing from this game, Cheat? I've actually got Florida favored in this spot. So I'm seriously taking a look at the Gators in this one. What do you have for this game?
Yeah, you know, I have it pick, and I wasn't surprised that it was pick. because I've been high in Florida for a few years now. And then Phil Steele came out and said he's, you know, Florida's his number one surprise team that could contend nationally for a title. So I'm kind of shocked that it's still the fact that you're getting 3.5, 4 points places. Then, you know, for people that look at the market or have seen this line, it did get under a field goal. It was like 2, 2.5, like flat, I think mostly 2.5s. And then maybe there were a few threes still around, but then the suspensions happened. There's 7 guys suspended for Florida, including, I think his name's Callaway, their best receiver, probably their best skill, anything position player. He's out. So, and there's one other guy, I think a defender that is a semi-significant or a regular starter that's out as part of that group of 7 that got suspended. So I guess I'm not surprised to see it back over on the other side of 3. The problem is, and what people were asking me about this when the suspension rumor was happening, because it wasn't official for like a day. There were a lot of rumors and people were like, well, should we be betting Michigan -2.5? Because, you know, if this rumor thing's true, then, you know, you're going to be getting with, you know, over a field goal, probably a worst case you could buy back. The problem with me was, I thought 2.5 was still too high anyways. You know, like you were saying, you have Florida favorite. I thought it should be pick, and that's where it was headed. And then this happened. So I didn't want to tell people to bet Michigan -2.5 when it should be pick. And then even if there's suspensions, then the 2, 2.5 is probably still a little high, but at best market price. So I didn't tell anyone or advise anyone to do that. But it did come up over a field goal, so they would have been right, or they would have had a little middle here. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Florida money coming again. That's my guess. I still think pick's correct-ish. There's still a lot to be learned about this Michigan team, who has one starter coming back on defense, and I think one of their – is it a safety or maybe it's just a defensive back, but it was like the only one returning that had any sort of significant playing time last year decided to transfer. So Michigan's down to – one guy that's even taken a snap on defense in their secondary. A lot, you know, freshmen are going to probably have to make a big difference, which they're going to be talented freshmen coming from Harbaugh's recruits and in Harbaugh's system. But there's still a lot to be learned. It hurts that now Callaway can't take advantage of it because he's the Florida Gators' best player/receiver. We also don't know who Florida's quarterback is going to be. That's the other thing. They haven't announced it. I think it's good though for Florida. The reason being, and I have a friend that's a Gators fan just asking me about this, and he's like, man, Florida's so bad. They can't even figure out who their quarterback is. It was going to be Zaire, but now there's the freshman kid who's supposed to be their future stud. And I was like, I think it's good news. I think the fact that Zaire hasn't earned it right away or just kind of gotten the nod from the get-go is that the freshman kid, I don't remember his name. It may be like Clark or something. Adam may know. He can reaffirm after I finish breaking this down. But the fact that they haven't named it, I think, means he's doing a fantastic job in camp as a freshman. And they might, I think they're just seriously considering making him the starter from the get-go. And they have a 3 or 4 year starter on their hands, which is going to be really beneficial for a team that's generally really, really elite defensively. And, you know, it plays in a division in the SEC where they're going to have a shot at SEC championship games or title games pretty regularly. So I think it's a positive thing. And that's another reason why no matter who ends up being the starter, I think this battle is legitimate because both are playing and looking really good. And, you know, with everything else and the number being high anyways, I think this comes back down. So that's my guess. If I had to make a play just because of the number, it definitely would be Florida here.
The true freshman is Jake Allen. They've got a redshirt freshman named Kyle Trask. So I'm not sure if it's either one of those.
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah, it's the redshirt freshman.
Well, and that is a big thing because, you know, there is a quarterback battle at Tulsa. Tulsa's a team that I know you like a lot between Chad President and Luke Skipper. And, you know, a lot of people, there's a negative connotation to that. It's almost like in Major League Baseball, and, you know, I mean, I'm an Indians fan, so I know all about the small market ideology and all that. People used to give the Indians a lot of flack because they had a lot of platoon players. Well, platoon players are a good thing. You know, you're having an advantage in that split. But it has a negative connotation because people look at it and say, well, neither one of these guys is good enough to play every day. Well, you know, sometimes it's not a bad thing to have that level of competition like you're talking about here. And, you know, at a place like Tulsa where you're going to play in a high-octane offense, you're going to be able to put up numbers, means both guys are probably playing okay. And I would trust somebody like Phillip Montgomery to make that call. I would trust somebody like Jim McElwain to make that call. McElwain's a very, very smart guy. I mean, look at what he did with Colorado State. So – you have to trust somebody like that, and I agree with what you're saying there about Florida.
Yeah, I think that's a good example too. I mean, Chad President is even, he was a recruit from Montgomery at Baylor. He was going to go to Baylor. He transferred to Tulsa to follow Montgomery over. I mean, this could have easily just been Montgomery's guy from the get-go. Just everyone knew it, and they announced it, 2 months early. Fact that he's, hasn't announced it, I think, is one positive for Montgomery because he's not just going to give it away because it's his guy. I think that's just good coaching, make him earn it type thing. But two, it means that maybe Luke Skipper's actually been, as a, I think he's a redshirt freshman as well. He's been fantastic in camp and at least giving President a run for his money. So I think that's really good. I mean, platoon guys, I think in baseball is very, that's, I think it's illogical to say that. Like the Dodgers this year is a great example, who I'm a fan of. I'm from LA. The fact that they have so many different outfielders, utility guys that can just play versus lefties or righties, switch in and out. That's just, it doesn't mean that, Puig wouldn't be a literal everyday player on another team. He would be. So would probably like a guy like Kiki Hernandez, would probably be a regular on half the teams in the league. And the fact that, neither of them play every day, or even Jock Peterson, right, as another example. And they traded for Curtis Granderson, and they just have all these different guys who can have advantages versus righties versus lefties, and they can sit and even Andre Ethier still on the team. That guy, I just think it's crazy to say those guys wouldn't be as good just because they're platoon guys. And it goes the same way, and especially when you're looking past quarterback, where you have positions like defensive line or in the secondary, depending on the packages you're running and your scheming, where you're subbing guys in and out a lot, where you need your fifth and sixth guys on the defensive line to be really good too.
All right, let's talk about this Florida State-Alabama game. This one's fairly big. I don't know. It's kind of important. But one of the things I talked about and actually wrote this preview up on Tuesday for BangTheBook.com is this game feels like it means everything, but ultimately it probably means next to nothing. I mean, whoever wins the game is going to have a nice cushion in terms of the college football playoff and the selection committee and all that. But as you mentioned, I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago from a futures standpoint, if Florida State loses this game and runs the table the rest of the way and wins the ACC, they're a playoff team. If Alabama loses this game, runs the table, wins the SEC, they're a playoff team. So it's a great matchup. It means a lot to both teams, but it's not a season ender by any means.
Yeah, it's definitely, you hate to use the word meaningless, but it's close. It's a fun game opener against two of the top, 4 or 5 teams in the country, and it's going to be fun. But either team, if they win, it's kind of like, okay, you still have to win a lot of your games left. You can probably get away with losing one. If you lose this, you can still win the rest of your games and maybe even a second one in Alabama's case, if it's the SEC, and get into the playoff anyway. So, yeah, for me, and we talked about this from the future standpoint, there's another game like this, like early on, USC Stanford play each other, Oklahoma plays Ohio State. These are all teams, if they lose that game, if anything, I'm looking to buy that team from a futures perspective, getting, a much bigger number than you would have before the game because of the one loss this day and age. And the example I bring up every time, if people have heard me on other shows, I apologize. But a few years ago, Ohio State, Virginia Tech, same thing happened. They lost the game early in the year. It was the first year of the playoff. No one really recognized the value and especially the Big Ten bias that may exist in the committee. But Ohio State lost a game and everyone thought, well, that's it. Cause in the past you lose a game, you're basically out. And they were 75-1, some places, 50-1, most places to win it all. And sure enough, we bet 75-1 actually, and they won out the rest of the way and they won the whole thing. And that's an example of you're not going to get that big of value. That mistake will not happen again. But similarly, if say a team like USC loses to Stanford early, or even Ohio State, another example, right? Going to a few years ago, they lose to Oklahoma. Neither of those teams are out of it if they win the rest of their game. So you're going to get a really good price. I think if anything, it's worth looking just to buy on those teams that do lose that game, or in this case, Alabama, Florida State, the loser of this game, you might get a pretty decent price in the futures market for them to win it all.
So you got Alabama -7. I know from a power rating standpoint, your lean is Florida State. From a power rating standpoint, my lean is Florida State. Brian Leonard said he's got this -4. So his lean is Florida State. All of us are in that same boat, and yet you look at a game like this and you go, I can't do it. I don't think I can do it.
Yep, that's exactly where I'm at. I'm at 5 from a power rating standpoint. To be honest, I was more like 6, and I upgraded Florida State after really, really early in the summer after some of the games of the years were first popping in, I talked to some other guys that were sharing numbers, and I was a little lower on Florida State than everyone else. So I was like, okay, I respect that. So I bumped them up a little, but either way, I had this 5 or 6, so it's probably not enough to bet them anyways, but 7's so key. You know, in a week 10 game, I probably would, but it's early in the season, like week 1, it's just there's a little more reluctance to do it. I think my main reluctance, though, ultimately comes from the Alabama side, and I apologize if I've said this on your show already before, too. I don't think I have, though, but I actually really believe that Alabama, this could be the best team of all time. And I currently have them rated in a sense where they're one of the best teams I've ever power rated in the last decade. They were in that realm last year. And just because they lost, and people say, well, they lost to Clemson, they couldn't be the best team of all time. I get where you're coming from, like from the classic, like, you know, ESPN talk show battle argument perspective, sure. But from a vacuum sports betting perspective, like a 60-minute game doesn't actually make a team not as good as they could have been all time. You know, like Alabama could still have been the best team I've ever seen last year. And they were the best team I'd ever power rated last year, like the last 6 weeks. And I've been doing it for 10 years. Just because they lost in Clemson doesn't mean they were. And reminder, their most reliant player and runner, Bo Scarborough, got hurt in the second quarter. So that's part of it. I mean, if you really want to get into the details, they had some excuses. Lane Kiffin didn't let Jalen Hurts go until the end of the fourth quarter after they blew the lead. And then he scored again, actually, and marched him down. And that was positive. I mean, there's a lot of things that could have gone where Alabama wins the game. No two pick plays for touchdowns for Clemson. Alabama wins, and now they're the best team of all time, when because they lost, they're not. That's kind of the argument that I think is, like, it's kind of all a fallacy in that sense. But from the numbers perspective and just the philosophical perspective, they were, in my opinion, one of the best I've ever seen and the best I've ever power rated. They lose guys on defense to the NFL. They always do. Lose Calvin Ridley, right, receiver to the NFL. They always have a guy like that they replace. They replace fine. They're going to be just fine. This is the dynamic, though, that makes them better than any other Alabama team, and why I'm afraid that this year they could just absolutely obliterate everybody. Alabama teams have never, ever, ever had a quarterback like Jalen Hurts. A kid who last year at 18 and 19 years old, when he was being held and people were getting upset that Lane Kiffin wasn't letting him go, still rushed for 1,000 yards as a quarterback in an Alabama offense, you know, while he had the reins on him, right? Well, Kiffin's not there anymore. The plan is to let him go. He could absolutely, if you add a dual threat elite quarterback to an Alabama team that's already just Alabama, I mean, that could be next level tierness that just, they could just crush everyone. And the one thing, the last point I want to make about last year and then why I wouldn't bet this number, the reason you kept, and I kept upping the power rating with Alabama, they were covering every single game despite getting bet on too. So they were getting moves on them in the market. They're typically a team that you'd think is a public team, right? Big favorite. Everyone's betting on them and they don't cover more than like half their games. It was like the Patriots last year too. Like they were getting bet on and they just crushed everyone and covered anyways. And I think it could be more of the same. So I'm being very, very conservative with my anti-Alabama game bets. Probably won't be betting against them at all this year, honestly.
No, that's perfectly reasonable, perfectly fair. I don't blame you, and it honestly wouldn't shock me if they find a way to get a perfect 100 in my power ratings here at some point. They're at 97.5, and if they do go out here and do what is possible against Florida State, like, you don't want to overreact to one game, but if I see that Brian Daboll is going to let Jalen Hurts just go off, I mean, the sky isn't even the limit. I don't know what the limit is for this team at that point. So that's when they do get really, really scary, for sure. One more game to talk about here, and then we're going to touch on a couple of other things to wrap up this show. BYU and LSU. BYU, this game getting moved to New Orleans, which effectively makes it a home game for LSU, and obviously it's understandable why they moved this game out of Houston with everything going on there. And again, our thoughts and well wishes to the people of Texas and everything that they're dealing with. BYU now goes into a really, really tough spot. They did not play particularly well last week against Portland State. I don't know how much that matters, but now they're facing a 16-point line here against LSU playing down in Louisiana.
Yeah, this is a game, and I think people that are listening, if you're not brand new, you know that I was pretty high on BYU this year. In general, I thought a 500-1 or 400-1 shot on them to win it all actually made a lot of sense. They're only going to be underdogs in two games. This LSU won on a neutral and a home game against Wisconsin. They play 13 games already anyway. I really liked them. I liked them in this LSU game. I bet plus 14 myself here in town. And then sure enough, the Portland State game happened, and I actually loved it. And you asked me this on your show a couple weeks ago about teams playing FCS games early. And in my head, I was like, you know, BYU can't just think this game's a pushover, easy game. Look ahead to LSU, Utah, Wisconsin trio that's following, which is coming up. And then sure enough, I think they were. It seemed pretty evident to me. I don't think they're that bad offensively. And defensively, they're really good anyways, but it seemed like they were kind of out of sorts, way, way, way too many penalties. I kind of have a feeling that they may have been looking to that LSU game, which got me excited because this perception was going to be LSU's going to blow BYU out. They couldn't really even pull away from Portland State at home. Reminder, Portland State 2 years ago beat Washington State on the road outright, a 9-win Washington State team that went over their season win total by 3. So you have to credit Portland State. I don't know the name of the head coach there, but he might just be really good at getting his team ready for these week one games against power conferences, power conference teams or high level teams. I think he just does a really good job as part of it too. He doesn't not give them credit. I'm not trying to dodge them either. I think he's done a good job now in, you know, two of the last three seasons, almost pulling an upset. They were down 11 in the fourth quarter, or down 8, excuse me, in the fourth quarter, and ended up losing, I think, was it 14? But they had a chance, and then they did beat Washington State a few years ago. So I think they deserve some credit, but I do think to some degree BYU was looking ahead to this LSU game. So back to my point, I was really excited. I thought LSU was going to be like this darling favorite on a neutral that's going to crush BYU, and I really thought BYU would cover and maybe even win the game outright. And, you know, sure enough, the Houston thing happens. Like Adam said, you know, thoughts and well wishes or prayers if you're into that thing. I think that they needed to move at 100%, so I'm totally fine with that, and I'm not even frustrated because, you know, from a betting standpoint, because they moved it and they didn't keep the bets action. So thankfully, they didn't screw anyone over in that regard. It could have been bad, but, you know, when you're betting a game that's lined to in a rotation number and the ticket literally says, you know, neutral game at Houston at X o'clock, and then they play it somewhere else, I don't think that ticket should be action. And so everywhere, I mean, they took it down everywhere. They refunded and voided everything, and now they have a separate rotation for it and everything. But I'm not rebetting it. So that's the ultimate point here, is it is a pretty brutal spot now for BYU. Not only do they have to play in Louisiana where LSU is, but, you know, fans, and I have friends being a BYU alum, that there's a lot more Mormons and LDS culture on the West Coast. That's like not a hidden, you know, fact. There's a lot more on the West Coast. It's easier to travel to Houston. There's just a lot more in Texas, period. A lot of them have a lot of young families. There's just a lot of families in the Mormon and LDS culture. A lot of them are going to make family vacations out of this that can't really, one, maybe afford to switch on short notice and make a change and go to New Orleans. But also, New Orleans isn't necessarily a family-oriented place for a, you know, family/culture that's very, very conservative. So I don't see them making the change anyways. So they're going to go from, I think, having an edge in the majority of the fans in Houston. Remember, a couple of years ago, they went into the first ever game played at, you know, Jerry Jones' new stadium in Dallas, and against number 3 Oklahoma, and beat them outright, unranked against number 3 Oklahoma. They just had the majority of the fans. They had the feel, everything, and they have that. I think that culture sets up well for them in, you know, in Texas, whereas Louisiana is going to be a different story. Not only that, you actually look at the actual team now. Not only will they just only have maybe 10 or 20% of the fans, they have to travel way further. They have to play now in a completely different, I guess, you know, climate that's going to be maybe even more humid than Houston would be. I'm not sure if that's correct, though. I know both are pretty bad, but it's still a tough one. I guess the Superdome, though, they'll probably just close it, so that humidity might actually end up mattering, which would be nice. But LSU doesn't have to travel hardly at all. They're just right there. So it changes things for the teams as far as like a traveling aspect on top of the fan stuff. I hate the spot now for BYU. I think it kind of stinks. I hope for the sake of just the future they can pull off the upset. But I have a feeling now that LSU, it's just a couple of those extra variables that go their direction that probably gets this to be an LSU win, and honestly probably land somewhere in that like 14 to 17 now. So I'm just staying away, and I'm kind of bummed because I was rooting for BYU really hard this year. with the future, and this kind of was pretty unlucky for people that hopped on with me.
All right, so do you have a free pick for our listeners of a game that we haven't talked about yet?
Yeah, I had one lined up, like I said, just 2 days ago. It was going to be like my free pick I use for stuff all week, but it's moved 6 points. That was the Boston College over 46. So I wouldn't use that one. I would say, though, that one that I've been eyeing that I know you kind of like too, that is still in range and worth betting, in my opinion, is Cal North Carolina. I actually bet the under in the game too, which has moved a ton, but I also bet Cal plus 12.5, and you can still get 11, and I recommended it down to 10. And I think my number is like 8. I think you said before we hit record, your number is 8 as well. So there's some value just from a sheer numbers perspective, but I'm really, really curious to see, I think it's Brandon Harris, a guy who just was really, really bad at LSU over and over and over. He's a quarterback that's hasn't technically been announced the quarterback for UNC, but probably is going to be the guy. How is he going to do with an offense that returns, get this, this is outside of Trubisky. They only returned 12.7% of their offensive production from last season, like their receiving yards and rushing yards. That's really, really nuts. I mean, they're just brand new offense that is going to struggle. I have no reason to think that, they're going to score their 30 to 40 points a game, whatever they've been doing the last two seasons. And they play a slower game now with Brandon Harris. That's just going to be the case. It's just what he did at LSU. They're not going to be going nuts. And they didn't really play quick anyways, which is part of the reason why I liked the under. And the biggest reason for the under, and part of the reason I also like the Cal side with the number being high, they brought in the defensive coordinator from Wisconsin last year. His name's Justin Wilcox. They had the best defense in the country last year. Wisconsin gave up 14.1 points per game. Their yards per play stuff was, I think they were second maybe to Alabama, actually. A lot of the metrics, they were top one or two. And Wilcox now goes over to Cal, a team that goes from trying to run quicker and play no defense to maybe having this young defensive-minded guy that could just absolutely crush it for him. And so I actually think the change is good, especially when you're playing a team that has a brand-new quarterback who's playing against guys or alongside guys that have no experience, really. This just points to a really close game that stays low and slow. And getting over double digits, getting 11 with Cal, I still think that's the best bet left from some of the games that I've hit that haven't actually moved yet. So I would recommend Cal plus 11, and I'd bet it down to 10. Like I said, I think getting the double digits is significant. And if it falls down under that, then I would just pass at that point.
I'm actually kind of curious, where do you think this number goes? I mean, I do have the number 8 as well in my power rating, so you were right on point with that. Do you feel like this thing maybe goes 11.5? Do you feel like we get some of that early public money on North Carolina in the morning to kind of give us a little bit better of a number? Or do you feel like, 11's probably the best we're going to get at this point?
That's a good question. I think it's probably going to sit right here. I actually don't think it's going to move much more. I don't think a lot of people are going to buy into Cal as much as I am. Just that's my personal opinion, I guess. But it did come down to 10.5 already. So you've already kind of seen the buyback, which generally makes me think, and we've talked about it a few times now on the segment, you have a certain group of people betting one side. And then when their buyback happens, it's not someone setting up the buyback, but rather I think just other groups playing because they think it has value. And, if this was last year at the end of the year, then yeah, this number is really short. And maybe there's some people who don't think the changes are going to be as drastic as I do. And so they laid the 10.5 with North Carolina. And that's why it's 11. There's actually a 12 here in town at CG, which is a pretty sharp book. So maybe they took a bet on North Carolina yesterday when it started moving back up some. So my guess is that it just sits around here. I don't think it's going to move either direction much more just because I think the people have come in on the 12s, 12.5s and pushed it down. And then once it hit 10 and 10.5, it came back up. So that's my actual guess. If I just say this is kind of one that's just going to sit at 11, doesn't mean I don't think it's still a really good bet. I just, I'd be surprised unless some, much more, I guess, powerful group came in and knocked, one of the sides either direction a lot more. That'd be my prediction as it stays around the 11. And so I'd just bet it now. I wouldn't really sweat trying to wait out an 11.5 or anything.
The one thing I'm kind of wondering is if you get a little bit of that recreational action on Saturday morning of people looking at Cal and saying, oh, this is a 9 a.m. game for them. like it matters because it's week one. You know, they've been out in Chapel Hill for probably, they'll probably leave tomorrow, I would think. So they'll be out there a couple full days, you know, and of course we're recording this on Tuesday. If this was like a week two game, I'd be a little bit worried about that early start, but not week one. I don't think it's anything to worry about here in this context. So one last thing I want to ask you about for this Hunting for Winners segment, Cheetah. Adjustments going into week two. Once all the dust settles here in week one, again, these are numbers that have been hit around for 4 months or so now, or for 3 months or so now. What is going to be the catalyst for adjustments for you as we head into week two?
Yeah, I've talked about it a lot on other shows, and I'll just keep driving it home. But I mean, I'm going to look a lot at market moves. One example already for people that are paying any attention, there was a really, really easy yesterday for a week two game, and it's technically a week one game for this team. But, you know, I had UMass Hawaii lined pick. It moved to -3, which is a pretty big discrepancy from where I would have had it. I get why they bet on UMass just from maybe a situational standpoint where it's a home opener against a team traveling from Hawaii, although I share your sentiments where I don't think when it's a week one game, the travel stuff really matters. It's not like they're back and forth, you know, week five, six, seven, you know, from the island and whatnot. So I'm with you. I think Hawaii was probably there at least half of a week early, and Cal will be similar for North Carolina in week one. But I get why, you know, UMass, one of their only maybe two or three winnable games at home, bet on them. Or maybe guys out there are just sharper and higher on UMass in general. So for me, I would have, and I haven't actually done it yet just because it was only a couple games the other day, but you know, I'd make an adjustment because that closed 3 points off from where I had it. I'd probably bump UMass at least a point, and maybe I would downgrade Hawaii a little bit, although they ended up, you know, scoring 38 and look pretty fine. So I think my rating for Hawaii is probably fine too. I just think I was a little undervaluing the UMass side. So sure enough, yesterday their game against Coastal Carolina opened, and my number before seeing where the UMass Hawaii game closed, which was 3 points more on the UMass side than, you know, where I had it, my number for the Coastal Carolina UMass game, UMass is now on the road, is pick, and they opened +3. And that doesn't account for the fact that I was probably low on UMass to begin with. And sure enough, they're now -2.5. So it moved 5.5 points. So if people were following just one, you know, having a number going into one game and seeing it close one spot, and then now already you're 5.5 points ahead if you bet the +3 on UMass. So that's one thing that I think I can just use as a quick example that's already happened going in to their second game that, you know, I'm just constantly doing for every single team, every single game, you know, not only week one to week two, but every week.
I'm actually really upset about that one because I had that one UMass -3 as my straight line before I even made any adjustments from week zero. And then, of course, it comes out +3, and I'm asleep at the wheel, and I wound up missing that one. But that is a really good example. And another example that I gave out earlier in the show, earlier in the week on Monday's show, was Rice. You know, I had that line 35.5, I think, against Stanford. It closed down below 30. Yeah, Rice got blown out, lost by 55 points, but I still adjusted Rice up. That was really the only adjustment I made from week zero, was to adjust Rice up because, you know, I was 5.5, 6 points off of that line. So clearly the problem, at least in my mind, was that I had Rice too low, and that's the big thing. I think that's hard for people to wrap their minds around, is they got beat by 55 points, and I bumped them up in my power rankings.
Yeah, it goes back to my example of the sixth, like Alabama maybe being the best team ever last year. Well, they didn't even win the championship. They lost a game where 60 minutes is pretty meaningless in the scope of how you should perceive and project a team to be. So in this case, yeah, Rice got blown out. You had it 35. Even though they got blown out, that 60 minute game they played, by the way, in another country called Australia on the other side of the world, where who knows what, you know, state they were in. I think it's totally fine when the market said it should have been way lower. You have to trust the market and everyone else out there betting into it more so than just, you know, one game that you get to see for 60 minutes. And that sample is just so small in the scheme of things.
Well, a lot of good thoughts here on today's show from Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com. What do you guys have going on over at the website right now or over at Podcast U or anything like that?
Yeah, just a lot of the same, selling my season package for college football. If you're interested, I say this every time now, just because I think it's important. I don't like to recommend people just to buy single picks or even a week at a time. But people can only afford less, so I think that's okay if you have to do that. But there's a lot of volume. I'll have 18 to 20 games a week for the first half of the season, and if you try to jump in one week where we don't win, and then or after a week we went 15-4, I mean, people just it's hard to guess. And switching handicappers, this and that, I just recommend if you can make the afford and make the investment, do a season or maybe at least a month. You can also do like 3 month type stuff. They have options over there. So just doing that right now. I have podcasts. You've almost got, I think there's like 10 games left I need to post for breakdowns for this upcoming slate for the week. But a good majority are already up there. So if you go to podcastu.vegas, you can listen to a lot of them. A few are free. And then there's some few that you just have to subscribe. It's really cheap for a week or a month just to listen to all the audio content that I'm doing there. So yeah, I appreciate you letting me plug the sites, Adam, and I hope you get better. I know you're feeling a little sick right now.
That's all right, man. I'm starting to feel better already. And for those of you that enjoy listening to Sports Cheetah, and I don't know why you wouldn't, we're going to have him on here again on Friday. We're going to record Thursday with some introductory Super Contest thoughts, talk about the format, talk about betting strategy or picking strategies, I guess, since there's really not betting going on because your bets are already out there. So, at this point, you're just looking to pick winners and hopefully pick them at a very high success rate. But we'll talk about that on Friday. And again, that should be something that we're going to have on the podcast U Network as well. So that'll be kind of a cross promotional type of thing between the two sites. And Press, I know that's something that I'm really excited about, and hopefully you are as well.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm excited. I'll talk to you Thursday.
Great stuff there on today's show from Sports Cheetah of wagertalk.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at Sports Cheetah. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll be joined by Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com for this week's Powers Pick segment, and also by Rolf Michaels from wagertalk.com. We'll chat some NFL week 4 of the preseason with him, and then also get into some of this college football stuff with him as well. Coming up on Friday, like I just said, we'll have that Super Contest segment with Sports Cheetah, where we introduce the contest, talk about the strategies, the format, all those different types of things, because there's a lot of stuff that goes into this contest. It seems easy to simply pick 5 games a week over 17 weeks. It is much, much harder than that. There are a lot of wrinkles to this contest that you have to keep in mind, a lot of things you have to be aware of. So that'll be a good segment to introduce the Super Contest and talk about what we do with it over at bangthebook.com, and also what Cheetah is going to be doing with it over at that podcastu.vegas site. We'll see if I can get Brent from DSI Sportsbook on Friday's show. I don't know if that's going to be possible because we usually record Thursday evenings. With them being independent now, he's probably got some more plates spinning down there. And, of course, there are a bunch of games on Thursday. So we may not be able to get him this week, but we should be able to get him in future weeks here on the show. But that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.